AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The soy complex was on the defensive again today, with bean oil leading the way to the downside. Wheat was also driving lower, and corn futures had a tough time hanging close to unchanged. The cattle complex, sharply lower. Lean hog futures, steady to slightly lower.
Live with double-barreled Brian thoughts via Farm Journal Studios, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with the Brianstein. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins. Directly following the news, Brian Split from AgMarket.net. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, how's it going? But you know what?
Mm-hmm.
It got cloudy here in northeast Iowa.
Already?
And, yeah, and the patio outside the bunker is starting to get wet.
No kidding.
It's happening already. Yeah, and the temperatures have warmed up. I mean, the atmosphere is still going to destabilize. There is still going to be a round of storms following this front that will happen tonight. We had a great conversation with Brett Waltz from BAMWX about the severe weather threats to expect today, tomorrow, into Thursday. And some of the longer-term influences that are happening out there with the weather. Had that conversation with Brett this morning, so check that out if you haven't heard it. But here we go. You know, we've been asking for rain for so long, and then all of a sudden, once it starts to rain, the phrase, boy, it sure rains easy, keeps popping into my head now.
Yeah. Of note here, and I'm just sort of speaking about, because we're right at the tail end of what's expected to be a humongoid storm that reaches, I don't know, like Oklahoma City, clear up into somewhere in Canada, maybe to the Yukon. I don't know. It does look like it slowed down a little bit, though. This morning they were expecting it to hit KC around 5 p.m. today. Now they've got it pushed off to like 6:30 or so.
Okay.
So we may have a little more time.
Yeah, good, but boy.
Sounds like you are out of time, actually.
Well, there are some... I would say that the southwest 40% of Iowa is now under a tornado watch.
Agreed. Yep.
The eastern, east central part of Nebraska, tornado watch.
Yep.
So including Omaha and that Lincoln area that just got pounded last weekend, Friday night into Saturday. So watch for it all.
We've got a conversation
with Brian Grady coming up here in just a little bit. What does all this rain mean for planting and what it might mean for the market? And then, of course, Brian Split coming up right after we get done with the markets to give us some thoughts on what he thinks about today's price action. All right, let's get to him.
Chip, soft red winter wheat futures led declines yesterday, and hard red winter wheat futures led the way to the downside today. July SRW futures spiked support at $6 before recovering to close in the upper half of the day's trading range. July HRW futures spiked and closed below support at $6.40. USDA rated 49% of the U.S. winter wheat crop in good to excellent condition. That's down 1 point from the previous week. The Pro Farmer Crop Condition Index showed another steep drop in HRW conditions with modest improvement in the SRW crop ratings. USDA says 34% of the spring wheat crop was seeded as of April 28, well ahead of the 19% five-year average pace. July HRW wheat futures today 15 and one quarter lower, 635 and a quarter. July SRW wheat down 15 and one quarter to 603 and a quarter. July spring wheat closed at 704 and one quarter, down 3.5 on the day, Chip.
Yeah, it's the western production areas for HRW that we are watching most closely. It is dry, and there's not a lot of rain in the forecast for those areas.
Corn futures felt spillover pressure from sell-offs in wheat and soybean futures. July corn futures opened slightly lower and firmed to test resistance at 450, but could not generate enough upside momentum to trade above that pivotal level. Corn ended the day low range with next chart support at 440. Pro Farmer Crop Consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor cut 1 million metric tons from his Argentine corn crop estimate, dropping his outlook to 49 million metric tons. His Brazilian corn crop estimate unchanged from last week at 112 million metric tons. USDA says 27% of the U.S. corn crop was planted as of Sunday. That's 5 points ahead of the five-year average. July corn futures 2.5 cents lower, 446 and three quarters. September corn down 2¾ cents, 455 and three quarters. December corn futures closed at 469 and one half, down 3¼ cents, Chip.
Feels like the corn market is running out of time to turn that Argentine crop problem into a source of support, but we'll talk about it with Brian Grady coming up in a bit.
July soybean futures opened above 1180 and then spiked support at 1160 before recovering to close above that support. The strike by Argentina's crushing facility workers continued, but support from that market disruption faded fairly quickly, actually, as traders expected the strike to be short-lived. Malaysian palm oil futures traded to the lowest level in 2 months, and that dragged soybean oil futures lower. USDA says 18% of the U.S. soybean crop was planted as of April 28, 8 points ahead of the five-year average pace. July soybeans today, 19 cents lower, 1163. August beans down 19 and three quarters, 1165 and a half. November beans close at 1159 and one half. That's down 18 and one half cents, Chip.
July soybean meal down 240, and July bean oil, get this, down 136 points today.
Oof. Well, USDA says 15% of the cotton crop was planted as of Sunday. That's a point ahead of the five-year average. And cotton futures plunged. July cotton today, 309 points lower, 78.43. Quickly on your livestock. June live cattle futures gapped lower and closed below 175 for the first time since April 15. Today, June fats $2.17.5 lower, 174.97 and one half. August feeders $4.12.5 lower, 255.50. And June lean hogs closed steady for a second consecutive session at 102.47 and one half. October contract 45 cents lower, 85.60. Chip.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Brian Split, agmarket.net. How you doing, Brian?
Great, Chip. What's going on, man?
Well, I'm watching this volatility in the soy complex and the soybean meal market in particular. What do you make of it?
You know, it looked actually pretty decent compared to the other products today, the soybeans themselves and the oil. And over the last 2.5 months, we've built what's called an ascending triangle, which is characterized by several highs all made in the same area. This is roughly around the 348 to 350 area ton basis July. And then we have an uptrend below the market. So we broke through that flat base of highs yesterday, went and tagged the 100-day moving average, traded through that overnight. And so while we did come off the highs considerably, we went right back down to retest the scene of the breakout and then closed still above last week's high and still above all of these highs that we were making last month in March. So a close above March high still looks good. And the target on that is up around 369, which takes you to where we were in late January. Corn continuous chart, I really think it's important for July to be trading above 450 once it's the front month. It's the same exact setup that we had 10 years ago. We had a bunch of highs right around 438 and did that 3 months in a row. And then on month four, we got through there. So now we're making highs 448 and three quarters, 448 and 444, 444 and a half. That's the last 3 months highs on nearby corn. So above 450 would be the same monthly breakout that we had a dime ago that led us to our seasonal highs.
Yeah. It's amazing how we keep referring back to that chart from 10 years ago, Brian.
The circumstances are so similar, right?
I know.
You bottom in 2010, you bottom in 2020. You have a major spike high 2011 and 2021, drought of 2012, the invasion in 22, bear market at 23. It's a transition year, right? So yeah. 24 is lining up very similarly still.
It's amazing. Really is. Can't lose track of it. It may not repeat exactly, but it's at least giving some clues on what to expect. Great stuff, Brian. Thanks, man.
All right, catch you later, bud. Thanks.
You bet. Brian Split, agmarket.net. We've got Brian Grady, editor, Pro Farmer, up next here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Davis?
Yes?
I stepped outside during the break there.
Oh, you did?
And the air is starting to get thick.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's not like dripping humid, but the humidity is building. There's no question.
Yeah. I think the wife thinks I'm crazy. We are sitting here having a little bit of lunch, and it...
Well, she's a rational individual.
She may not be wrong, but on this, it did seem like the light was sort of passing through a filter at some point. Like, the light is changing just a little bit. Something's going on up in the upper atmosphere there.
Yeah, yeah,
it's like, you know, the sun's kind of giving us the stink eye just a little bit. Like, enjoy it while you can, suckas.
I got you. All right. Brian Grady is the editor at Pro Farmer. He joins us right now. Beej, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, Chip. and Davis is a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Brian is also not wrong. Yes.
Brian is rarely wrong.
Oh, I don't know. Ask my wife. I'm wrong more than I'm right sometimes.
And then check with the boys.
I'm always wrong. They haven't gotten to the age yet where I know anything. So
that's,
still the stupidest human being on the face of the earth.
Yep, that takes a while. Takes a while for them to get over that, but they'll get there.
Drew's getting close, I think.
Is he?
He's getting close. So
yeah.
Josh, not so much. I don't think so yet.
Yeah, you're still paying for everything on Josh, you know. So
you're still the
knucklehead.
Yes, that's absolutely.
Oh man, what a spring! And the way that the markets have traded, who would have thought that at this point, as we're getting ready to flip the calendar to May, that we would have just wrapped up an 80-cent rally, you know, an 80-cent rally in wheat that took no time at all, Beej.
Yeah, well, you know, the boat was weighted real heavily to the short side, and not just in the wheat market, but across the grain and soy markets, and so you get those types of moves. But, you know, we've seen the past couple of days here, they can turn around real quickly or end real quickly, and so you have to be ready to take advantage of them. And that's the type of environment I think we're in. You got to keep in mind the long-term price outlooks on the markets here and take advantage when the opportunities are presented and those types of things.
Yeah. At the end of last week, and Davis will recall this, but at the end of last week, I was talking about the potential for wheat to pass the baton to either corn or to soybeans, and that we would see the short covering continue this week. Obviously, it hasn't played out that way. I cannot believe how, I don't know if they're stubborn or if they're comfortable on the short side of the market. Either way, Beej, it doesn't feel like the funds are interested in leaving the short side of corn.
No, and, you know, I think you have to take a broader look here and just use today as an example. Stock market down heavily, dollar up sharply, commodities as a whole down sharply. And so the environment right now isn't one where you're just going to see mass buying across the commodities. And so the risk appetite isn't there right now. And part of that, I think, is tied to the Fed and the uncertainty with monetary policy. You know, the expectation had been by mid-year that the Fed was going to be cutting rates. And now there's some murmurs in the marketplace that maybe the next move will have to be an increase in interest rates, because inflation's proven stickier. And so I think that the investor as a whole is going through a lot of things in their mind right now and trying to decide, you know, is this a buy environment? Is it a sell environment? If I do buy, what do I want to buy? If I sell, what do I want to sell? And so the broader picture comes into play definitely right now.
Yeah. You know, I'm I'm almost embarrassed. If I was really embarrassed, I wouldn't say it on the air. But is there a Fed meeting this week?
Yeah, it concludes tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we'll see. You know, there isn't going to be any change in interest rates. That's fully known. I think the key will be the post-meeting statement. And it probably won't change much, if at all. But Powell's comments afterwards, yeah, I think will be scrutinized really closely in terms of, you know, is he more hawkish or dovish, and then the markets will readjust from there, I think.
Right, right. Okay. So we turn the calendar from April. We get through another Fed meeting. When we get into May, what are some of the issues that you think are going to be the focus of the markets? I want to start with corn. Where is the corn market going to have its eyeballs?
Well, I think on planting first off, and not just the corn market, but soybeans as well. But off to a quick start here on the planting. So if you're going to get any kind of juice from planting delays, it's going to have to be really wet in May, and you know, looks like we're going to start that way at least. We had all the rainfall last weekend, and then we're going to get more this week, and so it's going to slow things down, but we're off to a really good start. So I think that first and foremost, U.S. weather and how that starts to play out. Now, the more rain we get now, the better the soil moisture profile will be as we move through the growing season. And keep in mind, there's the potential for La Nina to develop by summertime. And right, those that aren't familiar, La Nina typically equates to warmer and drier across the central U.S. And so if you're building back some of that moisture profile ahead of that time frame, it probably is beneficial at this point in time. And so that's kind of what we're looking at. We would have to have something like a, and I hope we don't see this, but something like a 2019 style May to really get the market concerned about plantings, in my opinion. Yeah. Yes, ugly. And that's why I said I hope we don't see it, because that 2019, if you don't remember, is the year that we had prospective or preventive plantings in areas that guys didn't even know what it was, to be honest with you.
Right.
Highly productive areas in Iowa, southern Minnesota, that took PP that year that literally they had farmed for decades and in some cases and didn't, they knew of it. They didn't really know what it was.
Or how it worked or anything.
Right.
2019 is a year that I saw one of the strangest things I've ever seen in a cornfield. The guy got out and planted the end rows, got rained out, and the rest of the field went prevent plant. It was weeds. And the thing is, I mean, the end rows look like a cornfield,
mm-hmm,
but the interior of the field was all weeds. And
yes, on crop tour that year, we struggled when we got into northern Iowa and southern Minnesota, yep, in some cases, to find fields that were side by side that were planted.
Yeah.
Lots of PP that year in this.
Yeah,
area.
Absolutely. And then if both fields were planted, they were more than likely both beans. We mm-hmm went through a lot of that up in, yeah,
or
in South Dakota.
Very immature corn that you
right
were like, oh, was this planted for silage or, what's the intention here?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I sure hope we don't go through anything like that. But
no.
But it
would probably take something like that from a market perspective to get them really concerned.
Okay. So let's assume that this crop gets planted in a mostly timely fashion. And by that, I mean sometime in May. And by the time we get to May 15, we're already at 27% done.
Right.
On corn planting. So I'm going to say by May 15, we've got half of the corn crop in the ground. The other half gets planted before June 1. And then that transition really starts to kick in to La Nina. The second half of the growing season turns out dry. Does the market even respond to that this year?
It probably would be delayed response.
Yeah, until combines.
Yes. They would want proof that the crop isn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is my opinion on that, just based on what's happened recently.
Yeah, and it's not just last year. It has happened more than just last year, that the dry conditions second half of the growing season just have not hurt that corn crop or the bean crop, for criminy's sakes, as much as history would have suggested. So therefore, it's time to make some adjustments and refigure exactly what we need to, or the markets will need to refigure exactly what needs to be factored in from pollination until the end of the growing season. Okay. We are in the middle of a conversation with Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer. We're going to go through some additional potential market movers, go to Argentina's crop problems next, and see how much impact that might have on the markets going forward. And, of course, what do we do about it all? We'll talk with Brian Grady, Pro Farmer.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Let's go to the markets page at profarmer.com and check today's closes. Where July HRW wheat futures were 15 and one quarter cents lower at 635 and one quarter. July SRW wheat down 5 1/4 to 603 and a quarter. July corn futures were 2 1/2 cents lower at 446 and three quarters. December corn futures closed at 469 and one half, down 3 1/4 cents. July soybean futures 19 cents lower, 1163. November beans closed at 11.59 and one half. That's down 18 and one half cents on the day. July cotton 309 points lower today at 78.43. On your livestocks, June fat cattle $2.17 and one half cents lower at 174.97 and one half. August feeder futures 4.12 and one half lower at 255.50. And June lean hogs for the second consecutive session unchanged 102.47 and one half. Try ProFarmer.com. Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Brian Grady, editor at Pro Farmer. Welcome back. I'm Chip. Davis is along as well.
Yeah, man.
Brian, we have talked about Argentina a lot the last two growing seasons. Last year's drought, as a matter of fact, the soybean meal market traded that drought twice. Once when it was happening, once later when they figured out that there was no beans to crush. And here we are talking about Argentina again with that late season disease in the corn crop. What's the latest?
Yeah, corn stunt disease continues to lop some production off. I don't think it's going to go a whole lot lower than what it is now. So, you know, we're looking at upper 40 millimeter ton range to 50 millimeter tons, about in there for production probably. You know, there's always a chance for a disaster in the late developing corn. Late harvested corn is going to be hit harder than the early harvested corn. So I guess there's a potential to take more off than that. But I think the market kind of knows the situation right now. And unless there is some sort of disaster, probably not a whole lot of impact there from a market perspective.
Okay. So Davis and I were talking when we were going through the export inspections numbers yesterday, corn well ahead of the pace that it needs to be at to get to USDA's export number. Is some of that already tied to the problems in Argentina?
Oh, potentially. I think that, you know, we've been pacing ahead on corn exports. USDA has just been slow to adjust it. And honestly, across the board on corn demand, I think you could see USDA go up in pretty much all those categories and pull down the ending stock some. The problem is you're still going to be above 2 billion bushels when all said and done, in all likelihood. And that's comfortable from a market perspective.
It certainly is. Certainly is. You know, they've made some upside adjustments to the usage numbers, but Brian, I remember when the initial thoughts on the 23-24 corn on the demand side of the balance sheet for 23-24, when they first came out, pretty much everybody said, I don't know, these are looking pretty light on the demand side, and it's taken a long time to get those upside adjustments.
Absolutely. And, you know, USDA's, they're typically either way out in front or they're really slow. And it just happens to be one of those slow adjustment years on this one.
Okay. Argentina, let's stay there. The strike that's happening at the crush workers. It's not like everybody's walking around with a big savings account down there. They've got to go back to work sooner rather than later, don't they?
Absolutely. Hyperinflation. And keep in mind, historically, Argentina has all kinds of these strikes at this time of year, right as the harvest hits, and they're going to start to work harder and those types of things, longer hours. So this isn't anything that's not normal for them. And they're typically short-lived. We're probably likely to see several in the near term. I think it was 2008 was the year where they had just the extended for like 3 months strikes, and it really killed their export market at that point in time. I doubt if we see anything like that again, because they saw what happened. From the farm economy all the way to the exporters to the workers, and it really, you know, crippled everybody that year. So I don't think that they'll go back to that.
What's the president's name down there?
Malay.
Malay.
Yeah,
he's never been through anything like this, though.
No, he looks like he should be a drummer in a 1980s rock band, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. And not only that, I think his specialty might be cowbell.
Yes, absolutely.
You are absolutely right. But he's never been through anything like this. I don't know if he's going to... If that could make them that could make the government side of things very stubborn.
Yes. And, you know, the early returns from a global perspective is that it's positive. He's taken positive steps. But the strike is happening because of some of the reforms that he wants and trying to push through to advance from a fiscal perspective. And that isn't friendly to the workers. And so there's kind of a disconnect there between what he needs to do and what he can do and still keep the people at work.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know exactly. It seems like the strike might have the potential to give us at least another pop in the soy complex. But boy, you got to be ready for it if it happens and take advantage of it, right?
Yeah, so we rallied yesterday and we pulled back sharply today. And part of that today's action was that broader market perspective that I talked about earlier. But, you know, the market fully expects that this will be short lived and the strike will end and there won't be significant lasting impacts to Argentina exports.
Okay. Well, I was hoping that it would happen by now, but I don't think it's going to. I keep watching my email for word that the Treasury Department is out with the final adjustments on the GREET model, and that's going to tell us just how clear of a path corn-based ethanol is going to have for to make it to the sustainable aviation fuel market. We had Emily Score on from Growth Energy this morning, Brian, and she was very cautionary in her tone that maybe this isn't going to be everything that the corn or the ethanol markets were hoping for.
I would assume she probably has to be a little bit more cautionary just from her position. But yeah. I think there will be a pathway for corn-based ethanol.
Okay.
There are going to be some hurdles that they have to jump through or jump over to get to those credits. And so it isn't going to be as friendly as what was once hoped for right. for corn-based ethanol. But I don't think the door is going to be completely shut. And we'll find out the details. You know, probably typically these types of announcements come out about 3 to 4 o'clock Central Time.
Yeah.
You know, they wait until late in the afternoon
right.
for whatever reason. But so I would assume within the next couple hours here that we will have some news on that front. And you know, like you said, we'll get the details on just exactly what has to happen for corn-based ethanol to be eligible for some of those credits. Yeah. And there will be some eligibility potential, but it won't be full, I don't think.
Right, right. Yeah, and even bio-based diesel. Made from soy, it sounds like there's going to be some hurdles that is going to have to clear as well. Okay, let's go to livestock and this H5N1 in the dairy herds. What are you watching most closely out of all of this?
Well, USDA announced yesterday that they are testing some of the beef in areas where it has been detected in the dairy herd. Mm-hmm. And so I'm, from a market perspective, the cattle futures have, you know, it's been fear-based trade yesterday late and then today. And so they're concerned that what happens if you find it in beef and while it may remain fully safe and well, first off, we may not find it in beef because
right.
as of right now, we don't have any confirmed cases in the beef herd. So we may not find it in beef and that would be the best case. If we do find it in beef, you know, then there's the risk of while it may not be high risk to the consumer, that doesn't mean that the consumer is going to listen to that perspective right. From the government, and it may shut off some beef demand. Right. And that would probably be a worst case scenario, especially given the timing of year. Now we have the big beef holidays coming up and, you know, the start of the grilling season here, Memorial Day through the 4th of July is a big beef demand period. And so the timing of this couldn't be any worse if we do get something positive on that front, positive test wise. And so we sure hope that that isn't the case because that would probably be a game changer from at least a short term perspective. And a fear-based sell-off type of deal in the cattle futures.
Yeah. Dang it. They're going to be testing in the states where H5N1 in dairy has been confirmed, correct?
Yes, yes.
And I would assume that they're going to be testing. It's not just, you know, feedlot beef that's going to be tested. They're probably going to be testing, you know, beef coming out of some of those cow slaughter plants.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be ground beef in that case.
So, what are the odds that they're going to find the virus?
Well, my perspective on all this stuff is that, like, if you look enough, you can find
things.
Yeah,
you're going to find it.
Yeah. And so that's probably my biggest concern as I sit here right now for the cattle market, the beef industry, those types of things. And like I said, the timing of it just couldn't be worse from beef demand perspective. So we hope that we get all negative tests from there. But when you start to look for things, a lot of times you end up finding something.
That's right. That's right. Great perspective, Brian. Thanks, man. I appreciate you.
You betcha.
All right, buddy. That is Brian Grady. Brian is the editor at Pro Farmer Newsletter. Okay, Davis and I will put a wrap on today's AgriTalk. We're still looking for that announcement on Greek.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Chip, would you say that's an apt description? Are you calmer now than you were this morning? How are you feeling?
No, not really.
No, not calmer.
No, I think the weather's got me a little amped up.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I'm starting to pull some of the static out of the air.
It might be.
That could be happening.
You know, today probably wouldn't be the day to go out and test your new 9-iron out in the open prairie.
Probably not.
Let's push that off a couple of days anyway, especially if you're already feeling, you know, you got the jeepers going.
Yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm. No doubt. That reminds me of years and years and years and years ago. Years ago, when I played a lot of golf, and every now and then I could get Mrs. Flory to come along and play some golf.
Uh-huh.
All right? And we were at this beautiful course on the bluffs along the Mississippi River.
Oh, nice.
It was gorgeous. I mean, we were having a great day out there. We were getting ready to tee off. I looked at the wife, and her hair was standing straight
Uh-oh.
Out in every direction.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I unloaded the clubs and left them there, and we went to the clubhouse. Yeah.
Just as kind of a tribute to the lightning.
Here. Hopped in the cart and drove clubless to the clubhouse. Didn't want it chasing us around out there.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, if you get a little stray spark off of a golf club, next thing you know, it's got everything started out there.
You know, if you were really thinking, you wouldn't even have started up the golf cart and just had Sue push it back so you wouldn't have any spark from any electrical in there at all.
Right. Yeah, no, that wasn't going to happen.
And
I wasn't going to push it, so.
No, not after a full morning of golf, I mean.
Right.
Guy's got his limits. Speaking of years and years and years and years ago.
Okay.
Broke out at 450 and ran higher. 24 shaping up to be a whole lot like 2014 for corn so far this year. Does that go too far?
No.
Does that seem about right?
No, that doesn't go too far. Like I said earlier, you don't look back in time at similar patterns with expectations that it's going to be an exact roadmap of what is going on. But if it is giving you a clue as to the trends and price turns, then you better be paying attention to it. You better pay attention. So that's not going too far back at all. And that's not, you know, when you talk about the degree of a price slide, pay attention to what we did in 2014 versus what might happen in 2024. And the same on a price recovery, the degree of the recovery, not price point to price point, but the degree of the recovery. Pay attention to that.
Why is it that we sort of discussed it a little bit. Can it be brought down singularly to the weather pattern that has spurred this similarity in the market?
No, it's weather pattern. It is stocks situation. It's the pace of usage. It's the expectations for the supply in the year ahead. It's all of that has got to come together and at least sound familiar to get those familiar price actions. Okay?
Let me ask you about this. When they decided that it was best to just cook pork until it was basically jerky, and that's how you eat your pork chops now so you don't get freaking trichinosis. That's taken a while to peel off. What are the chances that, you know, what happens to beef demand? God forbid, and it has not, to be clear, everyone. Suppose it shows up in steaks, the bird flu. And now the FDA says, well, all you got to do is cook them to well done.
Yeah, no.
No problem.
No, that's a problem.
That's a big problem.
Yeah.
I mean, and not just from, well, that's sorry, I prefer that.
And I do not know what the recommendation would be.
Yeah.
Okay? I do not know what the recommendation would be. I mean, the reason that you cook ground pork and ground beef all the way through is because any piece of that ground meat had the potential to be surface at some point, therefore exposed to some sort of a contaminant that needs to reach a certain certain temperature level to be safe to consume. The reason that you don't have to do that with steak is because if you sear the outside, the surface, and you've cleared the contaminant from the surface, the interior is safe to eat rare. Okay?
I mean, makes sense.
Blue rare, if you want it.
Yeah.
Raw dog, tiger meat.
Yeah.
Sure. If you're making it at home from a steak, it's all good. It's all good. But you got to be confident in that. And the way that, so I don't know what the recommendation is going to be if they do find the H5N1 virus in or on meat at a beef packing plant.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I need to look into here. I'm going to this afternoon. We'll see if I can do that after we get the announcement on the Greet model. Hopefully that's going to be coming.
You're looking
way
for that announcement right now, aren't you?
Hey, I am.
He's marking time, everybody.
National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook: May 6th through the 10th, above normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt. North Dakota and northern South Dakota are the exceptions. Red River Valley is an exception to that as well, where near normal temps are expected. Mostly above normal precipitation expected through the Corn Belt, west to east. So some tougher conditions there. We got a Farmer Forum coming your way tomorrow morning and right here on AgriTalk.